Okay, Yud Zayin Amid Beis, 17b2, about 15 lines from the end of the page. Okay, it said in the Mishnah, V'kama yeh v'hiyah v'yeruy l'Sanhedrin, how many people need to live in a city that it should be worthy of having a Beis Din? Because every city, b'chol sherech, every city needs a Beis Din. So how many people in the city need to be, how many people need to live in a city to have a Beis Din? So it says 120. So the Gemara asks, what's this cheshbon of 120? Like, where does that come from? So it says like this. Esim Shlesha, you need 23. Keneged Sanhedrin Ketana, corresponding with the minimal Beis Din of capital punishment. Okay? Okay, then it says like this. V'shalash shudah shel esim shleisha, and then you need three rows each of the 23 scholars. Okay? In other words, it was a whole McGill over here. They needed 23 and then three more rows of 23, okay, to, in case they needed to present a case where they needed to add more judges or whatever.
The whole town.
Haritishim etart is 92. Okay? Now, Vasar Batlonim Shel Beis HaKnesses. Then there are the 10 Batlonim of the Beis HaKnesses. Believe it or not, every city, in order to have a proper city, needed 10 guys that were supported by the community who did nothing all day.
Well, so they learned all day.
What were they there for? To make sure there was a minyan in shul.
Like loiterers.
And because it says in the Gemara that if Hashem comes to a shul and there's no minyan, or there's only pennies in the pushka, Hashem gets angry. So therefore, in order to have a make sure there's always 10 people the minyan, there are 10 batlonim. Okay? Now, Vahrei Meir V'Trei is 102, because 92 plus 10. Shnei Chazanim, two court officers. That means summonses and lashes and all that.
Shnei Sofrim. Shnei Sofrim?
Oh, I'm sorry. Shnei Sofrim, two stenographers to write down everything that everybody says. And they need two, because sometimes you can't write, you miss a word. So between the two of them, they get it all. Two court officers that would give the lashes. They would be the court guys. Shnei balidim, two litigants. Shnei edim, two witnesses. Shnei zemim, two people can discredit these two witnesses. Shnei zemim and zemim, and those people that could disqualify the disqualified witnesses.
Wow.
1 second. So therefore, it's 114. Okay. So therefore, it's a funny chesed.
How it works?
Right. But it's 114, and we say you need 120. So where did the last six come from? So Tanya says like this: Kol ir she'em ba'asar dvarim alolu. There's another brayse that says like this: Any city that doesn't need these 10 types of people, ain't tamar chacham in a shoyl adur b'secha. A tamar chacham is not allowed to live in that city. There's a 10 prerequisites for a city to be able to exist for a tamar chacham to live there. What are they? He says like this. Bez din makim ve'inshin. A bez din, you need a bez din that can give lashes, which is three. Kupa shel tzedakah nigvis b'shnayim. A charity fund that's collected by two people. Mischalekes b'shloshi, given out the dispersing of the monies with three. Ubeis ha'knesses a shul. Beis ha'merchetz a bathhouse. Beis ha'kisi an outhouse. Reife a doctor. V'umen a bloodletter. V'lav liver a scribe. Tavach a butcher, or Melamatinekas and the teacher of kids. So amongst all these 10, there's another 6 people that you need to have in a city. So the bottom line is, in order to have a city which is fit to be called a city, to have a Beis Din, you need 120 people. And Rabbi Kiva says, Afmina Peda, you also need fruits. Why? Why do you need fruits in a city? Shemine Peda, because various varieties of fruits, Me'idin Mesenayim, refreshes a person, meaning able to see better, because fruits are healthy. So Gemara says, this is 10 things that a city needs in order to be able for a Talmud Chacham to live there. You need a court, you need a kupa shel tzedakah, that's two people collecting it, three people giving it out, a shul, a bathhouse, a bathroom, a doctor, a bloodletter, a scribe, a butcher, and a teacher.
And buy them, it's good buy them.
What is the fruits have to be with human beings? We are talking about human beings. Rabbi Akiva brings in all.
So he says, besides that, a shul is not a person either. A merchatz is not a person. It's things that a city needs which make it livable for a Jew.
No,
I doubt it.
I know.
I doubt it.
How come mikveh is not necessary?
It's a base of merchatz. Okay, so that's the cheshbon. It's a funny cheshbon. That's the cheshbon.
You don't need beef.
Huh?
You don't need beef.
No, this was given. The butcher. We were all
butcher. There's a butcher.
They say more than nutrients. You need to have good vitamins too. So fruits represent.
Okay. Them Nechemya Imed. Okay, but that's it. So funny cheshbon. Why a city needs 120 people to have a bezdin, and it makes all the cheshbonis in it. Okay, Tanya, Reb Nechemya said that it's not 120; it's 230 for a city to have a bezdin. So Gemara says, Tanya, we learned in a braisa. There's a third opinion that Meir Emer Meir v'Shivim. You need 100. I'm sorry. Masayim Shivim Veshiva, 277. So there's three opinions how big a city needs to be in order to have a bezdin there. Either 120, according to the mayor, it's 230. Okay, according to the Mechami, I'm sorry, 230, and according to Rebbe, 277.
The
23. Right. So the Gemara said, one second, Vatanya, Rabbi Eimer, Masayim, Veshivim, Lushmaina. But another Braisa says, Rabbi holds 278. How could you say 277? So the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yudah, Rabbanan. One is Rabbi Yudah's opinion, one is Rabbanan's opinion. Okay? Whether it's 277 or 278 is an argument. So it's really four opinions. How big a city needs to be called a city? Either 120, 230, 277, or 278.
Are these male over bar mitzvah?
Male over bar mitzvah.
Including the bet din?
Yeah.
So women can be there also.
One important type of...
All the things that we say are needed for the cheshbon don't apply to women.
But one type of people are missing from this.
Persians.
Criminals.
Oh. What's the difference?
Yeah. Hungarians.
Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan. Now, in the Chumash, it says, this is really a Rashi in Chumash, what the Gemara says. I mean, Rashi got obviously from the Gemara. It says in the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem to point Sari Alafim, officers of thousands, Sari Meyas, hundreds, officers of 50, officers of 10, right? That's what it says in the Chumash. So the Gemara says, so how many officers were there? So he says like this, Sari Alafim, officers of one person per thousand. Now, if there are 600,000 Jews, so how many were Sari Alafim? Sheish Meyes, 600. Sari Meyes, now if there were 600,000 people, how many were officers over 100? Sheish Alafim, 6,000, good math. Sari Hamishim, then there are officers of 50, so that's 12,000. Sari Asaris, officers over 10, is Sheshes Ribi, 60,000. Correct? Okay. Nimsa, so the Gemara says, according to this, how many Jewish judges were there in the Midbar? He says, altogether with Shivas Ribui, 78,600. If you had all these numbers together, that's what it comes to.
That means if there's a judge for...
Oh, one second, but there's a very big shayla over here. The Rishonim all ask a question, it's the wrong cheshbon. Because, I'll give you an example. It does just something to simplify it. You have to give Truma Maisa, right? So Truma average was 1 out of 50. Then you have to give from that Maisa, 10%, right? So it didn't work like this. When you had 100, let's say you had 100 bushels, right? So you had to give truma is 2 bushels, 1/50th, mm-hmm. Right? So it's 2 bushels. So what do you give maisa from, 98 or 100?
98.
You give maisa from 98. Not from 100. Because after you give Truma, then you're only left with 98. So Meiser, which is given after Truma, is not from 100. So if you make a Cheshbon over here, they say like this. If we start with 600,000 and deduct 600 officers of 1,000, so you can't have the Cheshbon again from 600,000. It's from 600,000 minus 600. And so only 599,400 remain, if you see at the bottom at 5. The officers of 100 should only be from 5994. And therefore, it should be altogether, officers of 10 should be 58,153. Okay?
They are part of Bet Din, but they're still a part of K.
Once you have officers of 10, officers of thousands, so then the people is left. It's less. No, so they. Some people say they're a peril from Shevet Levi. They count them from Shevet Levi, so it's a different Cheshbon.
You're not taking those people out. They're still there.
No, but they should be out. They should be out. Because they're officers already. Now you need officers of 100. Were the same guys who are officers twice? No, you can't have the same officers over the same people.
No. They are the part of Kehila, even though they're officers.
That's not what we're talking about. That's the Gemara is done already with the 120. Here we're talking about how many Jewish officers were there.
Right.
So the officers can be, you can be the same officer of 100 and over 10.
We're not talking about the same officer. We're talking about an officer who's an officer. He's an officer. But he's still a part of Kehila.
He should be
judged too. We're not talking about judges. How many officers are there? Not to be judged.
Oh, so you don't need officers of
different kinds.
Moshe Rabbeinu was setting up the Sanhedrin with judges. This is the way the judges were set up.
The judges. So you're talking.
It's not an officer, it's a judge.
But judges, that's what it means. Sari Alafim, he told him, set up judges. Now, if you're a judge of 10,000, you can't be a judge over 1,000. Because your judgment is on 10,000. That's your job.
When you take the judges out of the total number of people.
Right.
Okay, when you take the judges out.
Right.
That means that they're not the part of Kehila anymore.
It's not a question of part of Kehila. How many people are left? That's what the Gemara's question.
One question.
What?
The judges that were judging 1,000 people, so they had their 1,000 people to judge.
They're 1,000 people to be Makariv.
One second. And then you had judges of 100, and they had their own 100?
Yeah.
They were subgrouped under the...
No! Separate.
So some judges had the capacity for 1,000 people?
And some judges had capacity for 10. That's what it was. And they right. The judges, what they were in charge of.
I thought the 100 was the category of...
No, it's not.
But right, the judge himself, where does he go for judgment himself?
To hire a judge.
So he's included, he has to be included in the
hire. He's not included, he's excluded, and then he goes to them for judgment.
So Moshe Rabbeinu had to...
If he's including them, he's part of... You're missing the guys.
Moshe Rabbeinu would only judge 600 people.
Well, that's now we're starting a new Mishnah, a new Perek, that says who can be judged and who judges. So let's see this.
And Rabbi, I just want to, how do we know the 277, 278, how did they get their calculation? How did they calculate 277, 278? They don't explain it.
Forget it. Right. There's a cheshbon, they make a cheshbon where it comes from. You need, Reb Nechemiah makes a cheshbon based on the psukim. And then there's, according to Rabbi, another 47, because 11 judges vote to convict and 11 to acquit, and one is unsure, so you have to keep adding. So it could come to a number of 11. Whatever. Let's not get into it. Okay. Kohen Gadol. You know what problem the Jews cause? Oh, yeah.
Egypt. Well, judges promote peace, no? Because then they don't have to fight with each other.
Whatever.
What the old is the mitzvot?
Okay, guys, let's go back.
There are commandments and things like that. And they were from people.
So, therefore, they didn't fight?
I mean, how much? I mean...
Was Moshe Rabbeinu right after Matan Torah busy for morning to night? Well, what did they fight about already?
They're asking halakha. But we are talking about criminal cases and things like that.
There was all, there was problems in the desert with the boundaries and this and that. Okay, anyway. Next parak, let's go. Kain God, now the Mishnah is going to say who could be judged and who is, could be a judged. Kain Godel done, v'don in Isaac. Kain Godel could be judged, meaning if a Kain Godel did something wrong, they judged him. And also, don in Isaac, and he could be judged. He can judge. A Kohen Gadol can act as a judge, and if he did something wrong, he can be judged. Meid u'meid neiseh. He could testify in court, and somebody could testify against him. In other words, a Kohen Gadol is a regular person. He could testify, he could judge, he could be judged, he could be testified against on.
Democracy.
Therefore, no, but the, you see, a king is different. Also, chalitz, he could do chalitza. That means, what happens if a Kohen Gadol had a brother who died without children? Now that brother cannot marry unless there's Yibum or Chalitza. The woman needs Yibum or Chalitza. Now Yibum the Kohen Gadol can't do. Because the Kohen Gadol can't marry a widow. Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow. So the only thing in order to free that woman from doing is Chalitza. V'chayotin le'ishtai. And the same thing you could do Chalitza to Mrs. Kohen Gadol. What happens if the Kohen Gadol died without children? So his wife needs chalitza, right? Kohen Gadol's wife. Mm-hmm. If Kohen Gadol died without children,
why not to the
his
brother?
Brother is not a Kohen Gadol.
Yeah,
his brother should be able to marry.
Him. I didn't finish yet. We didn't finish. Chalitzin liishtei umiyab memesishtei. There was his wife. You could do either yibum or chalitza. Avuhu ain a miyabim a Kohen Gadol. Cannot do Yibum. Why? Because a Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow. Right? Okay, so basically, a Kohen Gadol so far is like this. He could judge, he could be judged, he could testify, he could be testified against. Okay? He could do Chalitza when necessary, and his wife, he could do Yibum or Chalitza too. Because a regular Kohen could marry a widow. Regular Kohen could marry a widow. So Kohen Gadol cannot marry his sister-in-law if the brother died without kids, but they could marry her. Then it says like this. Mess le mess, what happens, and this week's what we read yesterday, what happens if a Kohen Gadol's relative died? Now Kohen Gadol does not become tummy for anybody. Not father, not mother, not brother, nobody. He doesn't follow the hearse out. Okay? Because he might touch it, it may become tummy. Elehei nichnasin. Okay? V'hu nigla, ein niglin, v'hu nichnis. He says, when the coffin is hidden, then he comes out. When the coffin is revealed, he hides. In other words, he keeps away from the coffin completely. But he goes with them as far as the entrance to the gates of the city. Okay? Because there's no buildings that can block the sight. In the city, it's shayach to hide behind buildings when the coffin goes by. But out to the city, it's all open area. So therefore, he's going to be seeing the coffin. And the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to watch the coffin of the relative go by because he might touch it. That's what Rabbi Meir says. So Rabbi Meir says like this. A Kohen Gadol does accompany the mess within the city limits, but on the condition that he hides behind buildings when the coffin is visible. Rabbi Yudaim and Rabbi Yudaim says, Eini Yetzim in HaMikdash. B'chol, he doesn't walk out of the base of Mikdash for Levayas. Because the Pasuk says clearly, Umin HaMikdash LeYetzim. He's not allowed to go out of the base of Mikdash.
Ever?
No. No.
Without purpose.
Huh?
Without purpose. How do you learn from the Pasuk that it's talking about the dead body?
Yeah.
Because that's what the Pasuk says. When he speaks about the Pasuk, Umin HaMikdash LeYetzim, is speaking when there's a dead body there. The Pasuk speaks about when he's an Einin.
Can I go one step back?
What?
If the Kohen Gadol is not a Kohen Gadol anymore, can he do Yibum? He's post Kohen Gadol Kite.
How does that do? What is it? Pope that retires? Kohen Gadol until he dies. So he can never become a non Kohen Gadol. In other words, like this, Rabbi Yehuda holds, he takes the pasuk literally. Min hamigdash lo yetze, for speaks about dead people over there. He cannot leave. So Rabbi Meir holds, he can walk until the end of the city. Right, he goes out of the base of Migdash for the funeral. So the question is, how does Rabbi Meir learn the, it says min hamigdash lo yetze? So Rabbi Meir holds that it doesn't mean Migdash as the base of Migdash. He cannot leave the kedush of a kohen. But he doesn't mean literally min hamigdash lo yetze. By the way, the Kohen Gadol, I mean the Rambam writes, Gemara says later in Sanhedrin, we'll see, the Kohen Gadol can go home during the day. He lived in Yerushalayim. He was able to go home whenever he wanted, whenever he wanted, whatever. He didn't sleep, he didn't permanently stay in the Beis HaMikdash. But here we're talking about for funerals. And the Pasuk says, Min HaMikdash L'Yetze. So Rabbi Yehuda takes the Pasuk literally, Min HaMikdash, from the Beis HaMikdash, he cannot go out, period. So he doesn't even go anywhere with the body. The body goes to the funeral, he stays in the Beis HaMikdash.
What about close family?
The same thing. What do you mean?
The close family, he...
Not Kohen Gadol. Nobody.
Does he have guards that walk ahead of him to make sure things are clear?
Exactly.
No, because in Yerushalayim B'chol, there's no tumor.
Issue is the seeing or a mechitza takes care of it. Is the seeing, he cannot...
Well, the Gemara says he can't see it because we're afraid he might come to touch it.
Oh, so it's a Gezerah.
Right.
So,
okay, Ukshum Menachem Achedim, when a Kohen Gadol comforts mourners, that means there's a mourner that Kohen Gadol wants to comfort, all the common people go in the order of one after another, and then the assistant, so to speak, separates between the Kohen Gadol and the rest of the people. In other words, like he says, the Kohen Gadol goes in the middle with the assistant on his right and the people on the left. Okay, in other words, to show that the Kohen Gadol is unique, separate, special, and so on.
Isn't the Avil Tameh if he goes to...
Yeah, but he didn't touch the Avil.
Comfort
him. He doesn't touch him.
He's got to look. He's got to look at them.
So only tell me if you touch him.
His assistant had to be
Kohen. Usually it was, but the
deputy
assistant Kohen Gadol. What?
Deputy.
Second. What?
Was
deputy. Deputy Skan Kohen Gadol.
Second.
Yeah. Ukshum is nachem achedim, and when a Kohen Gadol, okay, he doesn't go to funeral, but he's still a mourner. So when people comfort him, kolam aymin, like the whole nation tells him. We are your atonement. What does it mean, we are your atonement? May you be atoned through us, that whatever hardships you're supposed to have, we accept upon ourselves.
Who says to who?
The people.
Common.
Commoners tell the Kohen Gadol, whatever you need to be punished about, we should get it.
But he's already punished.
But that's what it means, with his death or whatever it is. And he tells them, "Tis baruch min hashemayim, you should be blessed from heaven."
Rabbi, is it the reason that the Ravonim never made a gezerah for looking at tamei people? Because you never get, if by touching, you're not going to get it.
One second. If you can't look at tamei people, what are you supposed to do? Go into seclusion?
Well, in the Beit HaMikdash, everyone's pure, no?
But you walk out in the street, there's full of tamei people.
They used to have to go outside of the city if they're in tamei, no?
A woman's a nida. A guy's a zav. I mean...
But they make sure the people know about it, right?
Yeah. In the olden times, when a woman was a nida, she wore a special garment. She wore special garments that everybody should know. She's a nida.
It's not embarrassing.
But then what was the choice?
I thought it's worse to embarrass a lady.
What? To become tummy. In those days, it wasn't an embarrassment.
How about the other people, like Metzora and all that they had?
What?
The other tumma. They all had a marking on them?
When a guy was tummy, people had to know that they were tummy.
When the Sephardim go duchan, the Kohanim, and you walk to them and say Tevarecheni, say Titbarachu min haShemayim,
and you answer min haShemayim Titbarachu.
No, Titbarachu min haShemayim.
That's what the Mishnah says. Okay, Shemavan and I say, when they would give him the meal, you know, the first meal, nowadays you have eggs and bagels or whatever. So, Kol Ha'am Mesubin Ala'aretz, everybody would sit on the ground, grieving for him. And he would sit and recline on a bench. In other words, it says that Kohen Gadol didn't sit on the low stool. In other words, there's a certain dignity that a Kohen Gadol had. In fact, there's a very interesting thing. The Mishnah doesn't say it, but later on, Sanhedrin is a very interesting din. A Kohen Gadol and a king, who stood up for whom?
Private or public?
Oh, so privately, the king stood up for the Kohen Gadol.
Hmm.
In public, because the king had to be the king, the Kohen Gadol stood up for the king. The king stood up. But in private, the Mishnah says later, the king stood up for the Kohen Gadol.
Any king? Goy or not Goy?
No.
Israel.
The rabbi, the Kohen Gadol should stand up for the king because he had a safer Torah on him. Even in private.
He didn't have it. It was next to him. He didn't hold it in his hand.
No.
Okay. Now, Melech. How about a Jewish king? And the Gemara is going to explain which kings we're talking about. They're talking about Malchi Yehuda, Malchi, Yisroel. But a king, Leidon, Leidon and Naisi. He can either be a judge or can be judged. Leimeid, Leimeid and Naisi. He cannot testify or can be testified against. The Gemara is going to explain later why. Which, by the way, is an interesting thing. That means David HaMelech was not a kosher witness. Shlomo HaMelech was not a kosher witness. We'll see that in the Gemara. Once David HaMelech also judged. Leimeid veleimeid anaisi. He cannot testify. He cannot testify against him. Okay. Leichaylitz veleichaylitzin leishay. A king cannot be form chalitza. Why? Because the woman by chalitza spits at the guy, and he can't have a woman spitting at a king. So therefore, the woman is stuck, by the way. If a king's brother dies without children, that woman is stuck. And you cannot do chalitza with the king's wife. You cannot perform yibum, because the din is a king widow is not allowed to remarry. And therefore, if there's no yibum, you don't do chalitza. And Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, Rabbi Yehuda says like this: Im rotz lachleitz eliyabim, if a king wants to do chalitza, zochel atayv, that shows he has bittel to the mitzvahs of the Torah. Chalitza is a mitzvah. But Amru Lei, the Chacham said, Rabbi Yehuda ain't shaymin lei. Even if a king wants to, you're not allowed to. Why? Because there's a din later in the Gemara is going to explain that Melech Shemochel al Kvedei ain't Kvedei Mochel. A king who forgives his covid you can't do it. If a king says you don't have to bow to me, whatever, you don't listen. He has no right to be Mechel because it's not his covid. He's representing God to the Jewish people. And same thing with the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol could be Mechel. So Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, if a king wants to do a mitzvah, chalitza, so then even though he's going to get spat at, it doesn't matter because he's doing a mitzvah. And the Chacham say, no, he can't be Meichel, this covered. Then the Gemara says like this, Ve'neisen al menusei. You cannot marry a king's widow. That's the halacha. Okay? Or by the way, he brings down from Yerushalmi, if a king divorces his wife, also, once a woman was married to a king, she's done for life.
Even
a widow.
Or a Kohen
Gadol. By the way, you find this. No, Kohen Gadol doesn't say that.
David's sons.
It says by. No, we'll soon see. One king, one opinion says, could marry another king's widow. But Achashverosh does the same thing.
Yes.
After the girls lived with Achashverosh, they were stuck for life because once they were lived together with Achashverosh for the night, they were not allowed to marry a commoner. Mm-hmm. But this is the din by him. Rabbi Yehuda says, argues, Neisi HaMelech HaMenusa Shel Melech. A king may, even though the widow of a king is not allowed to get married, but another king could marry the widow. How do we know? Shekei Matzinu B'David, we find by David HaMelech, Shenos HaMenusa Shel Shol. David HaMelech married Shol's widow. Shenema, because it says, Ves the Etin L'cho, Hashem says, I gave you, as Beis HaDinecho, the house of your master Shol, and the wives of your master in your bosom. That means the pasuk says clearly that David HaMelech married the widows of Shaul HaMelech. Yeah, because then it's not a problem, because it's one king with another king.
How many wives had...
David HaMelech had six wives.
At the same time?
Yeah. Because not, and they had... From,
he had six
plaques. No, yeah, the question is, how many plaques from David HaMelech has? It's a different opinion. But David HaMelech had six wives, and Nathan and Navi told him, if it's not enough for you, I can triple it. So from there, the Mishnah learns later that a king can only have 18 wives. The Torah says, Le'yarba le'noshim.
Yeah, that's not considered.
He must have been Sephardic. No, a king, it says in Torah, he can't have a lot of wives. Yeah. So Gemara says, how many? 18. Why? Because the Gemara says, we learn it out, David HaMelech, later in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, David HaMelech had six wives. Nasan and Navi said to him, if it's not enough, kahena v'chahena, I'll triple it. So when they learn, a king can have 18 wives, up to 18 wives.
So he can do chalisa yubu.
No, king can't.
What about Malchus Yisrael?
Well, he has five, six
we'll
wives.
See later exactly what the Gemara means.
He can marry the wife of his dead brother.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Why not marry the wife of his dead brother?
No, because... No, he can't. The Mishnah says, Le'chaylitz, Le'chaytz, and Le'ishdei, he cannot give chalitza.
Only wife of another king.
Huh?
Only wife of another king.
In some situation.
Yibum he could do, not chalitza.
That's what I'm
correct.
Saying.
Yes.
He can do yibum, right?
No, but another opinion says that if there's no chiyuv of chalitza, there's no yibum either.
Rabbi, if it wasn't for the tekana of Rabbeinu Gershon, then every man can marry up to 18 wives, or was just the king?
Just the king.
As a king is limited.
Regular person could.
We're gonna have 1,000 wives.
A regular person.
Can wish you luck.
So one, how did Shlomo marry more than 18? I'm not asking that as a cliche, but if it's a direct halach of the Torah, how did he?
He did it because he thought that would cause it was a question because nefesh. He married everybody's daughters, so there was no war. But he, Taka the Gemara says, he did wrong by marrying so many wives.
And how about becoming rich or having extra horses?
Only what he needs for the army.
But he went against those two as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the story. So the Mishnah was saying, Kohen Gadol can judge, be judged, you know, he can't do Yibum, he can't do Chalitza, I mean, all these things, whatever he does. And you can testify for him in all the process. So the Gemara says, Kohen Gadol, Pshita. It says a Kohen Gadol don can judge, why not? I mean, it's obviously. So it says, Don Naisi Yitzchali. The Chiddush is, that a Kohen Gadol can be judged. Okay? In other words, the Chiddush is that even though he's a Kohen Gadol, somebody would think it's degrading for the Kohen Gadol, just like the king, to go in front of a court. Right? Or you think it's degrading? So the Mishnah says, no, the Kohen Gadol could be... So while we're saying that he can be judged, we say already he could judge. But obviously there's no reason why a Kohen Gadol can't judge.
There's a lot of power for the Melech.
Huh?
Melech has a lot of power.
King has a tremendous amount of power. Correct.
He's tyrant.
Because of Domel Hashem?
The king, you should know, the king, there had to be, the Gemara said, the Mishnah says later, a king took a haircut every day. You're not allowed to see him in taking a haircut. You're not allowed to see a king in a bathhouse. You're not allowed to ride his horse. What if a king dies, you kill the horse. Because there's certain, in the ultimate level of respect for the king, because again, he's representing Hashem to the Jewish people, like similar to the Kohen Gadol, but the Kohen Gadol was not as a public respect, is not like the king. So therefore, the Kohen Gadol took a haircut once a week. Melech mistaper b'chol yom, because he had to look beautiful.
And who gave him a haircut?
A barber. Well, obviously.
He was a blind barber.
When the rabbi went to the Togo, to the mikvah, where other people didn't go in, right?
It ran out.
So why is that the Kohen Gadol has to be given respect in private? If the king,
the melech, because the kohen, again, the kohen gadol was the kedusha. There's the power, and there's kedusha. Kohen gadol represented kedusha. The melech represented power.
Mm-hmm.
So in private, the melech, the power of the melech, though, had to respect the kohen gadol's kedusha.
Hashem was less happy why the Jews asked for a melech, correct?
No, they asked Nia Kachol Agoyim. Because there's the same Tosim Alach HaMelech. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to make a melech. The Rambam starts the halachas that when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael, they were commanded to do three things. Conquer Amalek, you know, and make a melech. Divide the land, conquer Amalek, and make a king. So then the Gemara says, why were the Jews punished when they asked Shmuel for a king? So the answer the Gemara gives is because when they came to Shmuel, a Navi, and they asked for a king, they said, Nia Kachol HaGoyim. We want to be like all the other Goyim that want a king. Not because Hashem said so. And that's what Hashem was angry about. But there's a mitzvah in the Torah, same Tassim Malach HaMelech. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to have a king.
Mashiach,
what?
Is this connected to the same Melech HaMashiach? Melech HaMashiach.
Mashiach is going to be a king. As a din of a king.
Can we go just one step back about the judges? The last, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When the Jews came out of Mitzrayim, only Shevet Levi was the Shevet that learned Torah.
Right.
So all the judges, can we assume that judges all came from Shevet Levi?
No. Because we learned they had to take the judges from the Shivim Ish was from each tribe.
So each tribe did have.
They had. Levi itself was designated, but each tribe had scholars.
They had scholars.
Sure.
But they were not slaves.
They were. Levi wasn't enslaved.
No, I know the scholars.
The scholars were, but they were still scholars. A lot of Tanoim and Amiroim were business people.
I understand.
But they still were Tanoim and Amiroim.
They managed to still be.
And
scholars,
right?
Besides, they learned in the Midrash. They learned.
They learned, but that was after they left Egypt.
When we say the other Shvatim didn't do Bris Milah or Oved Avodah Zarah, it's not the
not everybody.
Blanket.
Kalev ben Yefuna was Oved Avodah Zarah and didn't do a Bris. Okay, it's not the majority of the tribe didn't.
Rabbi, when we're just talking about barbers, is it true that even nowadays it's a good idea not to get a haircut from a goy?
There is a din in Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to get a haircut from a guy.
But it doesn't apply now.
Because it might kill you.
Right. But nowadays it doesn't apply.
Because no barber is going to kill you.
So is it, but I heard something that said it's still better not to get it from a guy.
Why? Because he doesn't know how to cut the payas.
No, you would teach
it's him. It's not a problem. Not nowadays.
You could have said the same thing about a non-Jewish surgeon.
Huh? It's true.
You know, whereas in our the kings when they die, they kill the horse. In India, the Maharaj, when they die, they burn his wife, even if she's.
They burn his wife also.
They burn the wife.
They burn the wife with him.
Live wife.
No, they shecht her first.
No, in India. What? In India, the Maharaj, when he dies,
okay,
they
no.
Kill his wife with
so the people who. Who came and said, we want a king like the boy?
Why didn't they know a pasuk in Chumash?
Unbreakable love.
It's a pasuk in Chumash. They're supposed to learn Chumash. They learn Chumash. In Chumash it says, same Tassim Malach HaMelech. There's a mitzvah to make a king.
So why they say like the boys?
Because that's what they were. They said, why should we be different than all the other nations? They didn't do it because they didn't come to Shmuel and said, okay, Hashem told us we need a king. Let's go make a king. That would have been the right way.
Says Amalek wasn't destroyed yet.
There was, except Agag, but then they killed Agag. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Hanami Pshit, that's also understood that a kohen could be judged. Why? Because Ilei Dayin Elei, because the din is, if you cannot judge a judge, then the judge can't judge others. The Gemara is going to quote from a pasuk that if you can't judge the person, he cannot judge others. That's the din.
Why?
Well, the Gemara's going to learn from a pasuk. So then we see from there. So you're telling me the chiddush is that you can judge a kohen gadol. Not that he could judge; that's a given. But he could also be judged. So Gemara said, but that's also a given because if he could be judged, then he could judge, and if he could judge, it means he has to be judged. Yeah. Why? Because it says in the pasuk, "Is keishu shuva keishu." Search within yourself and search others. V'amar Eish Lakish, kshet atzmacha, first correct yourself, meaning judge yourself, v'achakach kshet achenim, and then you could judge others. So obviously, we see from that pasuk, in order to judge others, you need first to be judged. So if a kohen gadol could be judged, if a kohen gadol could judge, that means automatically he could be judged. So why do I need it? He says like this. Hello, the reason is like this. I did a kabbalah, Mr. Melech leidan veleidan and I say, but because by a king, the Torah said, the Mishnah said, a king is not judged and cannot be judged. King cannot judge and be judged. Because the Mishnah is going to the difference between a kohen gadol and a king. So because by a king, you're right. It's a given that a kohen gadol could be judged and judge. It's a given. Why does the Mishnah say it? Because the Mishnah is talking about a king already. And the king, the Mishnah said, by a king, you cannot judge him and he cannot be judged. So we're saying a kohen gadol could. Because it's showing the difference between a king and a kohen gadol. What?
If the judge says kill someone, and the king comes and says, no, don't kill him.
If what?
If the Beit Din says this person has to be killed, and the judge and the king comes and says, no,
you
don't
pardon.
Kill him.
Pardon.
No such thing. King
cannot pardon anybody?
No. Was he Nixon? Can't do it.
Or if the king says kill him, and the Beit Din...
That a king had a right to kill people if they would defer... Instead, the kings were tzaddikim. We're not talking about the... Okay. If somebody was married with Malchus, the king had a right to say kill him. The king didn't need a bezin. The king killed him on the spot. The king told one of the servants, kill him, and he killed him.
What if he was Meichel?
Meichel?
You can't
wait. Or
Meichel.
No, Melech Shemachal Kvedein Kvedein Mochel.
Chai
Misa, it's not negotiable.
No, you can, what you meant, commuting somebody's punishment, the king can.
There's no pardon in Judaism.
Oh, no?
No, if Benson says guilty, he gets killed.
Oh, it's almost.
That's one answer. Ibai Seymar, another answer is like this. So, Kamashman, what's it teaching us? Gedetanya, what does it mean a Kohen Gadol could be judged? It's telling us a chiddush like this. Kohen Gadol shaharag asanefesh, Kohen Gadol killed somebody. But mazid, if the Kohen Gadol killed him intentionally, Narag killed the Kohen Gadol. B'shegig, if a Kohen Gadol killed somebody accidentally, Gaila, he goes to Ari Miklat. V'eiver alasa v'alei sasa, and if he transgresses either a positive or negative mitzvahs, he's mamashik a simpleton. The Gemara is going to explain what that means. Okay? So basically, can you imagine a kohen gadol killing somebody intentionally? So they say, in the second Beis HaMikdash, that's what it's talking about. In the second Beis HaMikdash, kohen gadols were not.
If he kills some b'shege and he has to go to Ari Miklat, still has the status of a kohen gadol.
We'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to talk about exactly what that means.
Yeah.
I mean, he stays there until when?
Yeah, he can't go in because
until he dies.
Until he dies.
They'll come to him.
His own freedom also depends on his own death.
Then all the people come to him.
No, oh, there'll be another person.
We'll see what happens with the kohen gadol.
Someone else has to.
No, but Pashto is the kohen gadol. We're not going to talk about it.
How can you send the kohen gadol into exile if he's going to be there's so much tumah around and no one to watch?
He has to be careful. How do you make? What do you mean? How is he careful anywhere?
No, he's not going to. In Yerushalayim, he's careful because in Yerushalayim, everyone's careful with him. But
my Yerushalayim people are tameh.
I know, but they're more careful than the goyim. Going around in exile.
Ari Miklat is also Jewish cities. They're cities of the Levium.
The second Beit HaMikdash, there was Ari Miklat?
Yeah, I mean, the Gemara says the concept of Ari Miklat. The Gemara at the end of Saita says that Mishaburaba Amratzchanim. So, no, then Egla Rufa didn't. Yeah, Ari Miklat exists.
So, every 2 years, everybody got free?
Every year.
Every year?
A Machaya. Kohen Gadol died.
The Kohen Gadol live in
Yerushalayim.
Yerushalayim or in the holy?
No, he lived in Yerushalayim.